Welcome, everyone, to part two of Baseball America's annual Field of 64 College Baseball podcast. I'm John Manuel, along with Mike Lanana and Jim Schoner. We're brought to you by Louisville Slugger. Check them out on Instagram and on Twitter, at Slugger Nation. And, guys, we're halfway through. We're halfway home with this podcast. Let's start with the right side of the bracket as I look at my bracket. Starting with LSU, the number two overall national seed. First of all, Jim, you had the Tigers one on your national seed list. It doesn't seem like there's a big difference in one or two.
No.
Do you think LSU would have been the one had they won the SEC tournament? It feels like their strength of schedule was a lot lower than UCLA's. It felt like they kind of had to win the SEC tournament.
Yeah, the fact that UCLA lost its last series to Oregon, whereas LSU, I mean, they did win. They did go 2-1 in the SEC tournament, and they still, obviously, that would tell you that UCLA was ahead going into it, and you know, doing what they did, doing what it did wasn't enough to overcome, the Bruins losing a series. So UCLA must have been solidly ahead. So, I mean, it's not that big a deal. One versus two to me, I mean, as long as you're in the top eight, that's really what matters. And the Bruins, I mean, you certainly can argue for the Bruins. They're regular season champs of a very good league in the Pac-12. They only lose the one series all year. Other than the Dodger Town kind of little disaster for them there. But, yeah, I mean, it's fine either way.
Big deal in this regional for me is, the Lehigh is one of two teams in the entire field with a losing record, other being Sacred Heart. Number two, pretty auspicious beginning to the David Pierce regime in Tulane. Rick Jones obviously had a great run there. Post-Katrina, after going to College World Series in 2002-2005, you had the post-Katrina fallout. You know, Coach Jones lost a lot of talented assistant coaches there over the years, whether it was Mark Kingston, Jim Schlossnagel, both head coaches who are in this field. Once he lost his assistant coaches, he had a harder time. And then the transfer rule, to be quite frank, it was a big issue for Tulane. Coach Jones unable to kind of overcome that changing landscape. But Tulane goes out and gets David Pierce. And guys, great start for him there. Again, not an offensive ball club at Tulane, but they can really pitch. How much of a threat is Tulane? How lame is it that every time Tulane gets in a regional, unless they host, they're going to Baton Rouge no matter what? Feels like it's kind of lame.
Yeah, that's definitely a disadvantage being where being in Louisiana. I mean, I think Tulane's they're not dangerous enough to win the regional, but they can give LSU a run at least in one game. I mean, they're kind of a grindy, stick to it team. I don't think they would be cowed by playing there. Obviously, they play LSU every year, so it's not going to be something they would be cowed by. And I mean, I think they've got a kind of a centerpiece of their own. There was Stephen Alame, their shortstop. I mean, he's kind of, we've kind of said, Alex Bregman's kind of the quarterback of LSU. Alame is kind of that to Tulane. So
yeah.
And they can make some noise there. I don't think they're going to win it, but they can make some noise.
And Alex Massey is also like an ace for Tulane. Gives them a very dependable starter. And when they play LSU, it's mostly midweek. They're going to throw, if they play LSU, they're going to throw the book at them. And UNC Wilmington has gone to Baton Rouge in the past, and it's a kind of a funky team too. This is an interesting matchup with these two teams where Tulane's really built around starting pitching and UNC Wilmington built around the bullpen.
Right. And the one thing I'll say about Tulane, just backtracking a little bit, is they're a very young team, too. You look at the lineup, it's mainly sophomores in that lineup, so that bodes well for them in the future, just how far they've been able to get this year with, under new head coaching to be able to get to this regional. That really does bode well for them. But, yeah, you're right. With the UNCW, it is more reliant on bullpen than it is on its starting rotation. And it's really, I mean, you look at the numbers, and they aren't very pretty for the UNCW pitching staff. I mean, it's a 4.43 team ERA, and really don't have that go-to ace starter that they can throw out there. It's really going to be a Johnny Holstaff kind of effort, I would imagine, out of them. They do have some veteran bats in their lineup.
But not Matt Batts.
Not Matt Batts anymore. Former BA intern. Same year I was an intern here. Now in the Twins organization. Go
and
Matt
dealing,
Batts.
Dealing
and dealing.
Our all-time favorite Omaha. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah. So, I mean, I UNCW is an interesting team. It's a team that's flirted with their top 25 of points this year. Has had a quality year and does have some veterans in the lineup. Corey Dick is a senior in that lineup who's had a nice year and have other veterans as well. But this is definitely LSU's region. I think LSU's the clear favorite here, and I can't really imagine a scenario where the Tigers lose.
Yeah, to me, the only way... Yeah, Wilmington's a team built around its bullpen. Jordan Ramsey, Jared Giselle, some power arms. And it's a deep bullpen. That's how Wilmington wins its games. They don't win it with starting. Mm. And definitely like Steven Linkus, they've got some speed there. I was impressed that Wilmington got a two-seed, Jim. I didn't think they'd get a two-seed. I mean, their RPI is a two-seed RPI, but... Felt like most of their better opponents they lost to during the year.
It did, yeah. I mean, that probably was just a straight RPI pick, giving them a two. I mean, they didn't, you know, when they played good teams, they get swept by Florida State. They got swept by Charleston when they played during the season. Right. And they did beat them in the twice in the conference tournament, so that's to their credit. But that's really their best thing they've done. I think they went 0-2 against North Carolina in midweek games. I don't remember if they beat.
They went 0-3 at Florida State, but they do have a series win against Maryland.
Mm-hmm. Now, that's a good one.
I think UNC Wilmington's a little more dangerous than the
I think if they can, yeah. I mean, if they can, they can hit. So if they can get a lead in the 6th, 7th inning, they've gotten that bullpen can, you know, they would be in good shape. But I think, I mean, their starting is a big problem, and just with the, I mean, they haven't, you know, I don't think they've seen any arms as good as Alex Lang, other than maybe they would have faced Mike Schworn with Maryland. But other than that, I mean, and Bailey and Taylor Clark for Charleston. But
So, this is LSU's regional win. Yeah. We all agree that this is this shapes up favorably for the Bayou Bengals, and I don't know why I keep calling them that. Shapes up very favorably for LSU. I'm excited about their team. Just they play with such energy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They're really just compelling to watch, and it's just going to be a fascinating experiment to see if Palmieri can guide this extremely young pitching staff from start to finish, because that was the question coming into the year. They've answered it for 58 games. Mm-hmm. That's not what LSU's about. Mm-hmm. When you're at a school with 6 national championships, you know, you're not measured by regular seasons.
And it's not. And they've been tested these last few weeks as well. They really don't have a set closer. It's been by committee at this point. It looks like Bug might be the guy there. Zach Pearson's done well for them, a senior lefty in that pen, but they don't really have a dominant, you know, 95-96 closer that they can turn to. Jesse Stallings, a freshman, was kind of that guy at one point, but he's slipped a bit lately, so it's going to be interesting to see how they maneuver those pieces there at the back end of the bullpen. And you know, Austin Bain, they slid into the weekend rotation in place of Jay Godfrey, and he's been up and down.
Yeah,
he looked good in Columbia against South Carolina through a great start, but he didn't look quite as good in the SEC tournament. So
it's not like they're still standing by him, like there's a third guy in with Poche and Lang.
Right.
So right. LSU has, and again, that's it's just fascinating to watch this team. When the last few years, you look at Omaha and Vanderbilt, experienced and power arms last year, you know, a couple sophomores like Fulmer, but really it was more veteran guys on the mound for them, pushing the bullpen. And then Arizona and UCLA the previous 2 years, a lot of juniors, the Connor Wades and the Vander Ties and the Plutkos. Obviously Michael Roth, his first time through was a sophomore, but the other 2 years, junior and senior with tons of experience. You know, South Carolina definitely relied on more experienced pitchers. Even Matt Price was old when he was a redshirt freshman, for crying out loud. Mm-hmm. So usually not teenage pitchers who lead you to College World Series championships, at least not of late. LSU trying to buck that trend.
Yeah, the thing about LSU, it just strikes me as a team that's on a mission. I mean, they got upset by Houston last year at home. They're going to just, ever since Mike, you did that feature on Alex Bregman in the preseason, just kind of the impressions that, you know, kind of from your quotes from him and all that stuff, it sounds like they're that team's on a mission. They're not going to. They're going to get to Omaha.
They
the
play
whole year.
Like it. They are just their energy is unsurpassed for me. Watching other teams, I haven't seen them all like you guys have, but I don't see anybody else who plays with that fire and that energy constantly like LSU. They bring effort every game.
I'll say this: they were the loudest team in the tunnels as we're doing press conferences in between games, screaming and yelling. You know, things I can't quote here in this podcast. You know, there's definitely that fire there, and having some conversations with Bregman too. I mean, there's definitely a lot of confidence around this program, a lot of determination to get back and win a national title. So I would agree with those statements that they are very hungry.
Pretty interesting ball club to watch. Fun ball club to watch. Now, last year their bete noir was Houston.
Yes, that's a perfect segue.
And then Houston is now
a very, very juicy super regional potential.
It could be. It really could be. And it's a juicy regional. Three clubs from the city of Houston, which is underwater right now, basically. They had a ton of flooding last night. In fact, at the NBA Western Conference Finals game, fans were asked not to leave the Toyota Center because it was raining so hard and the highways were so flooded. So see what happens there weather-wise going into this weekend. That's a little sidebar to watch going forward. But Houston Cougars, number one seed, American Conference regular season champs, certainly not the road we thought they would take to get there, but they got there. Crosstown rival Rice, second seed. Louisiana Lafayette, the Raging Cajuns, they used to have a big rivalry with Rice in the postseason. Beat them in a super regional there, I believe it was. Beat them in a regional, I should say, in 2000, I believe, on their way to the College World Series. And then Houston Baptist, the four seed, first time ever representative of the Southland Conference. So, guys, this shaped up, Mike, yesterday in the video on the BA Today, you were kind of high on the Rice Owls. Pitching depth being the main reason why, but I got to tell you, Rice just seems like it lacks a little something these days to the Rice teams of old. There's just not a great amount of star power there. And this team, 13-12 against the top 100 this year, just feels like Rice is a fairly ordinary club outside of its pitching depth. Is that fair?
Right. I think that's fair, yeah. I do. But, you know, I do think that this regional, I mean, Houston's obviously played well, but it's been a tough year for them, especially with all the injuries that they've had pitching-wise. And I think Houston is more than likely the favorite here, but I do think that Rice could possibly upset them just with, you know, the pitching depth that they do have, and having Jordan Stevens and Blake Fox and Kevin McCann, who have had a great year. And you know, you can't, you know, that they do have some guys offensively that have had nice years. You look at the lineup and they've hit a lot better than I think people expected them to.
Yeah.
Especially, I mean, John Clay Reeves has had a great senior year. Leon Bird's been down. I know a lot of people were expecting big things out of him this year, including Wayne Graham. He was really excited by what he saw out of him in the fall, and he's been down. But other than that, I mean, Kirby Taylor's been great. Ryan Chandler, a freshman, has been very good for them at the top of the order. So I do think they're a talented team. I think they've underachieved this year, but I do think they're still a dangerous club.
And it's a very contact-oriented offense.
Right.
How does that play as a team, Jim, like Houston, where it feels like this is not the pitching staff, certainly not the pitching staff they thought they were going to have, but Lantrip, to a lesser extent, Weigel, some of those guys have really come through for them after the injury to Jake LeMoyne.
Exactly. I mean, Lantrip's had a great year. I mean, he was kind of the third guy in the preseason. We thought, you know, Aaron Garza and
Jake LeMoyne.
LeMoyne. I can't believe I blanked on his name, but anyway, yeah, we thought those were going to be the guys, and Lantrip was good. We kind of figured he'd be, you know, it's a good number three guy, but he really started coming on in the fall, and then he just kind of really just carried that momentum into the spring. And when those other two, and Garza's been hurt, Garza struggled, and I should say, and you know, LeMoyne's been hurt, Lantrip's really stabilized that team. Even when they were down at the start of the year, he was pitching well every week, and now they've kind of found some other answers there with Kyle Dowdy, the junior college transfer. Seth Romero is a freshman lefty they really like.
He's been money for those.
Yeah,
guys.
Exactly. He's out of the bullpen and starting. I mean, he's 2.15 ERA. He's been really good. So I mean, they've found some answers, which is to their credit, to that coaching staff's credit especially. And
big shock, Frank Anderson figuring things out
exactly.
For their guys on the mound. And big shock that Tripp Couch has figured out. Yeah, that they had enough depth for the kind of injuries they've sustained this year. Would fell much lesser teams and staffs. I mean, Todd Whiting does a great job there as a head coach. We talked about assistant coaches like Savage and Corbin and O'Sullivan, who were great recruiters, who've become great head coaches and still work it. Throw Jim Schlossnagel at TCU and Todd Whiting at Houston on that pile. Those two guys are great head coaches in part because they still do the hard work they did as assistant coaches. Well, they really work it. And this is not a too significantly offensive team, Jim, but they feel like they're a little more offensive than Rice is.
Yeah, I agree. And they do have
a little more power, a little more.
Yeah, they do have the, you know, I mean, they have a weapon right there with Chris Arriagart, 14 home runs, and they got some other. I mean, you know, Corey Jolks, Jasper Dallas, those guys are capable hitters. Jacob Campbell's another, an older guy who's really come on late in his career here. Kyle Servance is an established guy, so they've got a little bit of depth. I mean, it's not a fearsome offense by any means, but it's good enough that, with the way their pitching's come together, that I, you know, they're, I mean, I'll pick them to win this regional. I won't say they're a prohibitive favorite, but they're the favorite.
Now, speaking of consistent college coaches, like Wayne Graham, whose team, all they do is win conference championships. They won the regular season this year, not a tournament. But, you know, we talked about Todd Whiting and the Giants and Frank Anderson, the no surprise there. Tony Robichaux. This is what Louisiana Lafayette does. Took him to Omaha in 2000. They got within a whisker of it last year, lost that super regional at home to Ole Miss. That was a hell of a super regional. This team, obviously, a lot of change with this Raging Cajuns club. But Blake Traha gives him a leader. Fun guy to watch. And a lot of other things have not gone as they thought they would. You know, Greg Milhorn hasn't been kind of the stabilizing force, kind of been in and out of the rotation. But yet, Tony Robichaux and his staff just keep on plugging in answers, mm-hmm. plugging in guys. Not sure what you guys think of the Raging Cajuns. We haven't talked about them much this year. Feels like this is a team that's always going to – just always competitive. And they found a guy at LSU Eunice this year. And Stephen Trosclair is another classic Cajun name. I'm not sure it's pronounced Troclair.
Yeah.
But 16 bombs for this guy. I mean, as usual, it's a physical club.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think they're not as good as they were last year. Obviously, they have all the turnover they had, but they're still a dangerous team, and they still got some young talent there, like you guys are mentioning. They still got Trahan or Trahan, whichever one you want to go, whatever you want to call it, whichever alias he goes by. But
Trahan. Sorry, I get it.
You know, he's kind of another guy who's the, you know, real stabilizing force for that team. So it wouldn't shock me if they beat Rice or if they win a couple games here. I mean, And obviously they got on a little run there. They won their conference tournament, so you expect they're feeling good. Rice went 2-Q in the CUSA tournament, so
unusual.
At least they'll be rested. You can give them that. But
Lafayette won a series at mm-hmm. Alabama during the year. They won 2 out of 3 against another regional team in Stony Brook. Want to go transitive property? They beat Arkansas State 2 out of 3, which of course beat Louisville. So but anyway, that's all there is to that.
I don't believe in the transitive property.
I don't either.
I don't believe in math.
I really don't, but, well...
I'm just kidding.
So I don't believe in the transitive property. But not when it comes to baseball. it doesn't work.
No.
But lost the first game in the Sun Belt tournament and then rallied to win their way back into regional play. That always impresses me about a team that has that kind of toughness. I've always thought of Louisiana Lafayette as a tough program. So, to me, this is still Houston's regional to win. I favor them. Jim, I don't know how you feel, and Mike, make your picks.
Well, I've got the Cougs.
I'll pick Houston.
You're picking Houston? You just picked Rice yesterday.
I said that they'd have the best opportunity to upset, but I think Houston's still going to hold on.
All right. Those are not mutually exclusive. I follow.
Yeah.
Let's go to College Station, this SEC country. Who knew? But Texas A&M certainly has made itself at home in the SEC, and the Aggies will try to gig Coastal Carolina, Cal, and Texas Southern this weekend. This feels like an unnecessarily difficult regional that Texas A&M drew. Considering they were in the top 10 pretty much all year, I feel like, Jim, they got punished for a less than stellar finish to the season and a definitely less than stellar non-conference schedule.
Exactly.
That's why they're not a top 8 national seed. That's why they got a tough – I think they got a tough draw.
They did, and I think that was – when I was writing a post yesterday, kind of looking into the committee's moves, I can't remember if I mentioned it or not, but I feel like one of the other separators that you could throw in there about TCU and A&M was their non-conference schedules. I mean, A&M's, other than they went to the tournament in Houston where I saw them, but other than that, their non-conference schedule is pretty terrible. I mean, they do play some of these other, you know, the other good Texas teams in midweek games and stuff like that, so that kind of helps it a little bit. But those first 3 weeks they're playing Dartmouth or Holy Cross, whatever it was. I mean,
not even the good Ivy League team.
Yeah, exactly.
Dartmouth is good, but not even Columbia.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, that probably hurt them. I mean, the committee cares about how much you're trying to schedule. I mean, they played all these home games and
36 home
so
games.
So that probably hurt them. And when they kind of slipped late, that was the other issue for them not getting a national seed. Was they I guess, what was it? They went 1-3-1 in their last five series, as I recall. And they did, I mean, they did okay in Hoover, but that was probably what, it was kind of that combination of the late struggles and the weak non-con that hurt them.
It was late struggles without facing great teams. Yeah, they lost a series at LSU, 2 out of 3, that had a lot of hype, big series, fun series to watch. But then they, you know, sweep Tennessee, but then lose at home to South Carolina. Mike, how'd they look to you, to your untrained but up-and-coming eye? What'd you think of the Aggies?
Yeah, I mean, they definitely did some things that were, you know, they definitely did some positive things. I mean, Matt Kent looked really great in shutting down Vanderbilt. You know, he pitched a complete game gem against them, and so that's pretty huge. I mean, they've been trying to figure out that rotation all year just with all the injuries right. that they've had. And so if they can have him pitching that well, that's pretty big for them. You know, behind Grayson Long, who has been outstanding for them as a sophomore. They do have Tyler Stubblefield back throwing again. He threw out of the pen, which, if he can pitch to his capabilities, is a promising development for them. You know, they do have...
If they do that, they can kind of put Rick Hendricks back in a relief role.
And all,
they seem like they've shuffled around some guys' roles here late.
Yeah, I mean, they threw Hendricks out of the bullpen in Hoover, and he was electric. He looked very good, you know, hitting the mid-90s, just a filthy breaking ball. He threw a couple innings, and they ended up pulling him, and they probably shouldn't have pulled him. They probably should have let him finish the game, but no harm, no foul. And, you know, but behind those two guys, behind Grayson Long and Matt Kent, you know, there are some weaknesses there in that pen. I mean, they got smacked around by Vanderbilt, you know, 12-3. They just tore through that bullpen. So, you know, there's a little concern there. But they do have Hendricks. They do have Vinson, who is generally steady, who's generally been good for them this year. And, you know, they do have some nice bats in that lineup, too. Logan Taylor is a great player, a great defensively as well in the outfield. Made a great throw from left field, gunning down a runner at home in a key moment against Alabama.
Another athletic, energetic team up the middle, not as athletic on the corners. Because they could be had a little bit on the corner. But up the middle, it feels like Texas A&M is a pretty solid ball club and a deep lineup as well.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, they crushed Carson Fulmer. And
there's something to be said for that.
There is something to be said to that. So that they crushed him, and they actually, I mean, they hit Walker Buehler very well as well. So it was a good approach against them. And, you know, it's a dangerous club. There's no question. And I think... You know, I think Texas A&M fans could be left wondering why they didn't earn a national seed. You know, I think there's an argument there that they could have. The same with Vanderbilt. I think both of those SEC teams. I'm a little surprised SEC didn't grab 3 national seeds, but
I think we assumed that was going to happen all year.
Yeah,
it didn't. It kind of was surprising.
Yeah, I thought at least one of those two teams,
especially when TCU went 0-2 in the Big 12 tournament. I thought that was going to happen. How about the rest of this regional, though? Jim, I know you've seen a lot of Coastal Carolina, and we've all seen Cal, Texas Southern, winner of the SWAC. You know, usually a team that runs a lot, steals a lot of bags. Don't feel like they're a threat in this regional. But Cal and Coastal Carolina, I feel like, are threats.
Yeah, I mean, I'll tell you what, I am very tempted to pick Coastal here.
Do it.
I think if they... See, the problem is... For my, as I'm going to talk myself through here, is that
do it.
A&M, they don't need to throw Long or any of these other guys. They can throw anybody against Texas Southern. So they can save Grayson Long for Saturday. I'm thinking here, if Coastal can beat Dalton Jeffries on Friday, well, you assume Cal's going to throw Jeffries that game. I feel like if they can, I want to say if Coastal can do that, then they can win. But I don't know. I mean, they're going to get Grayson Long. I just don't know. I mean, I like Coastal's offense. That's a, it is a very, they don't get cheated up there. they are a punishing physical team. They can steal some bases. They can run. They got a few guys that can run too. Anthony Marks at the top of that lineup's a real spark plug there. But and Michael Paez too is another guy who's got 19 steals. But so I really like their offense. I mean, I'm not that familiar. I'm trying to look up how A&M's Park plays. I can't remember off the top of my head if it's
a park factor for me, but
I can find it here.
I will throw
it
in here.
It looks like it is. It is. Let's pull up the park factors. It looks like it is fairly offensive. So, I mean, if it is a park that's suited to Coastal style, then I
do it.
Maybe I'll. What the hell? I'll take the chance. They can do it. They can, if they beat Jeffries. I mean, it's tough. Jeffries and Long, that's a tough path to get through, to get to if you're going to start 2-0. But I mean, they might could slug their way through a loser's bracket too. I don't know if they have enough pitching, but
you're a believer.
I can see them do it.
I will say about Texas Southern, I'm going to throw this in there. They do lead the nation in stolen bases per game. This is not new. Texas Southern has kind of been their MO. Their senior, Jerry Ford, has been a 3-year starter. Every year this guy steals 20 to 30 bags. Every year he gets on base. Every year it's around 320. So there's something there for Texas Southern. If they can get some guys on base and get their offense started with some stolen bases, get that merry-go-round going a little bit. How's Texas A&M at stopping the run game? Mike, I don't know how they do. I know Mitch Knott is listed as a catcher, but I know every time I watch him, he's de-aging. Barish, I guess, the junior college transfer from Florida, is their catcher. And just looking at the numbers, looks like Michael Barish catches great, or he catches acceptably, and his catch and throw is more catch than throw. Is that fair? I mean, he's thrown out 15 of 49 guys this year.
Yeah, I mean, they weren't really, from what I've seen, they weren't really tested all that much in the SEC tournament, so...
And LSU runs on everybody.
Yeah.
They run hard, aggressively on everybody. Yeah. So it feels like you have to keep Texas Southern off the bases. Once they do get on the bases, that can make things challenging. Cal, meanwhile, is more of a power approach. I know Coastal's an aggressive offensive team, Jim. We'll see how that matches up. Barish is not there for his bat. 4 extra base hits for the Aggies.
And Cal's dangerous,
right
too.
There, yeah. They bash, don't they?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we've talked about Cal all year. I mean, they're dangerous too. I mean, you get Jeffries and Matt Ladrich.
Ladrich.
I mean, that's a good 1-2 in your rotation. I mean, Mason's
bad
good
either.
Too. I mean,
Mason's a good senior sinker baller guy. So
and Urseg, Paul, Aaron Knapp, all those guys. I mean, they are dangerous. Yeah. I mean,
feels like Cal, could have been a 2-seed.
Mm-hmm. I thought they were going to be.
So this is a strong regional.
Yeah.
B, Cal is 2 or 3 wins away, like here or there, a couple series here or there, from being a 1 seed in the host.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like A&M got a bad draw.
They really did.
And I'm picking them to win this regional because I believe in them. I think that Rob Childress is on the short list of Coach of the Year candidates, very short list. So I'm picking them to win, but this is a tough regional, and they got a tougher draw than they deserved. I think so.
Yeah, I would agree with that, but I would also go with Texas A&M.
But Jimmer, you are going off the board.
I'll take a chance. Yeah.
He's more convicted than I was with Rice.
That's good. We need to have some upset picks. So
yeah,
I like that one because I think that's a wide open regional, completely wide open. Let's go to Fort Worth, which I feel is less of a wide open regional, with Sacred Heart at 23-30 and Stony Brook. Which is not the 2012 Stony Brook team, but still a good Stony Brook team. Matt Sink still coaching them, 34-14. NC State 34-21. TCU the 1 seed at 43-11. TCU is my national championship pick. I said that in the video. I'm sticking with it.
Yeah.
I feel like TCU got a very favorable national seed if they get to host regional and supers. I think they're going to take care of business this weekend. I feel like if they were on a neutral field. With NC State, NC State's a very confident team with some physicality offensively. I feel like NC State would have had a little bit better chance for a less power-deficient ballpark. The perfect park factor, Lupton Stadium at TCU, sort of the most pitcher-happy ballparks in the country. TCU is perfectly built for their ballpark, and they're well-built for TDAPO. That's why I'm picking them. That and Jim Schlossnagel and his staff, Kirk Sarlos. These guys know what they're doing. Really feel like this is TCU's regional, and I don't feel like they're going to be sorely tested except for maybe by the Wolfpack. Convince me. Tell me I'm wrong, Jim. Tell me I'm wrong, Mike. I feel like TCU is a prohibitive favorite.
Yeah, you're not wrong. I think TCU is going to Omaha. I don't know if they win the national title. I think they could certainly contend for it and go deep into the College World Series. But, yeah, I don't see a scenario where – I mean, North Carolina State's obviously very hot. Finish the season on a tear. They have a great lineup, Logan Ratlidge at the top, and really they can hit the ball really well. But I question their pitching. You know, Corey Wilder, yes. Who knows what you're going to get out of him. And
I think he's probably going to be, like, not used unless... They're going to use right. Wilder, break in case of glass kind of use right now.
Right, right. Yeah, it's just... You know, it's tough. They're going to be very reliant on mixing and matching out of their pen, and, you know, you get the wrong guy, you get a big inning, and that's it. And I mean, TCU is not an explosive offense, but they know what their style is. They stay within themselves. That they play to that style very well. And, you know, going up against guys like Alex Young and Preston Morrison and Mitch Traver, I mean, they have four excellent starting pitchers for three spots. I mean, they're, you know, embarrassingly deep in terms of pitching.
That's a good way to put it. Mm-hmm. It is an embarrassment of riches for this team. It feels like, Jim, you know, Stony Brook, Sacred Heart, you know, this might be TFCO for these guys. I mean, someone's going to win a game.
Yeah, exactly.
I feel like at Stony Brook.
Yeah, probably. I mean, they do have some decent, you know, they can hit a little bit. They got, six 300 hitters here. So, I mean, that's, you know, it's okay. But, I mean, what's their, you know, how many good arms are they facing in the American East? So, it's...
Right. Cole Perugin, yeah. still there. Four-year player, was on the 2012 team as a freshman shortstop. Still there. So I know they like Zamora and Honahan in their weekend rotation, but I don't feel like either of those guys are difference makers.
I mean, are they going to shut down what's been a hot offense in NC State? So,
those teams have regional history.
Yeah,
I mean, was
exactly.
2011
that
was 2010.
Yeah, one of the lower moments in recent Wolfpack history there. But,
that's what I'm saying. They're not going to take
so
lightly.
Yeah,
they got
yeah, they'll remember it. Yeah, that was a game where they tried to get, you know, they outsmarted themselves basically with their pitching, with trying to save guys, and started. Anthony Zampsis was way down the depth chart and just got hammered. He didn't get hammered, he just couldn't throw a strike. So,
and that's it.
But,
I don't think Elliott
Abel's gonna
take
so that
Stony
would
Brook
be
lightly.
Like, yeah, no, he won't. But, I mean, if they can save Ryan Brown, their freshman lefty, who's been really good, I mean, if you can use someone else to beat. Is what we're saying where they shouldn't save guys, but.
Right, right.
If they can. Bit. You know, if a Kurt Britt or.
Really,
or
Johnny Piedmont.
Or Johnny Piedmont. I mean, with all their other starters, it's basically give them... You're just trying to get four, maybe five innings. I think that's what they're aiming for, really.
The X factor to me for NC State is Ryan Williamson. Mm-hmm. Seven very strong innings for them against Virginia in the ACC tournament. That's a guy, to my mind, when Wilder's giving you one inning or less than two the last two weekends, you're going to go Ryan... You got to start Ryan Williamson. But I do think NC State's dangerous... I think this was a bad matchup for them to go to TCU.
I guess that's too big an ask.
I think we're all picking TCU, correct?
Yeah.
Yep.
Maybe you can't see me on the podcast, but I'm doing that stupid horned frog thing they do. And I will say this, the downside of picking TCU to win the whole thing is the Woobirds.
Yeah.
I mean, that is
that's
a problem. That's a real problem. The Woobirds need to go home. And fly north for the summer.
I don't know if they're as bad as the Vanderbilt Whistler, though. The Vandy Whistler.
That should be like, instead of fan base of the week, we should do like non-fan of the week. We should do like a playoff of the most annoying fans. I think a lot of people are going to put North Carolina's super fan in there. He's loud and proud.
He doesn't
woo bird or whistle.
The whistling.
He's very loud.
The thing about the Whistler, and we can touch on this more when we get to the Vanderbilt region, but
that's next, isn't it?
No, it's
one after next.
He doesn't change.
A great segue.
He doesn't change his tune. It's the same tune, nonstop.
Can you approximate it?
He doesn't. It's like, and just nonstop.
Are you serious?
Something like that. I don't know.
I haven't been to a Vanderbilt game in person in a long time.
I don't remember exactly what the tune is, but he doesn't change it, and he does it on repeat, and it carries. It carries, and it's piercing, and I have nightmares about it. Honestly, I should have recorded it, and I could use it as my alarm ringtone in the morning, and
exactly.
I would just jump out of bed.
That's it. So, we're picking TCU there. Let's move on to another national seed, number 6 seed, Illinois. Best season in Illinois history. We will have Vince Lawrence and Asomo at that regional. Jimmer, you're going to Fort Worth slash Dallas. And if Hudson Belinsky had his way, / College Station, / Stillwater. So
I'm not up for 15 hours in cars here like he's like these guys here.
I love Hudson's I love his want tool, but I'm not sure about that common sense.
I don't know. I'm not sure he realizes how far things apart are in Texas.
Texas
nothing
is big.
Nothing is close to anything in Texas. That's my, been my experience.
You can tell that guy's a Northeast guy.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, everything's like an hour away.
Everything's, I mean, everything is bigger there. So, no question.
Yeah.
Illinois, Notre Dame, Wright State, Ohio. Ohio, a little Maction coming to Illinois. Any surprises here? They kept this very geographic, mm-hmm. by keeping it very geographic, by Notre Dame being a 2, mm-hmm. which I felt was somewhat generous, especially compared to, say, Cal.
Mm-hmm.
It really did seem like the committee thought, man, if you swept Florida State, you get jacked up. It got Clemson in, and it got Notre Dame a 2 seed.
And it didn't really knock FSU down.
No, they didn't.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, Notre Dame's going to be really good next year. When you look at their pitching staff, it's a lot of freshmen and sophomores. Look at their lineup. It's a lot of sophomores and juniors who aren't going to get drafted. I think Notre Dame's going to be a preseason top 25 team next year. They might be a preseason top 10 team next year. Lidge will be back. Fiala will be back. Biggio will be back. I think Lane Richards is going to be back. And the pitching staff is a lot of freshmen and sophomores like Ryan Smoyer, Gunther, the freshman out of the bullpen, Peter Solomon. I like Notre Dame's team. Mm-hmm. For next year,
mm-hmm.
I think this is going to be a good experience for them. I don't see anybody derailing the Illini train.
No, I don't either. I think the Illini just, I mean, obviously they lost, you know, they won 27-1, so yeah. It's really hard to beat 28
that. 28-2 now.
28-2 now.
Last 30 yeah. games.
They've lost two of their last three guys.
That's yeah. it. That's it.
So yeah.
That's the.
They're ice cold.
Yeah. So I.
That's cooler than being cool.
All right. Now, ladies, you look at Illinois. Look at the Illinois, and it's just, I mean, really on both sides of the ball. I mean, they have a great rotation with Kevin Duchesne anchoring it. Jason Johnson's been great this year for them. You have Tyler J. We've talked a lot about Tyler J. and he's the X factor for them. And you know, he could pitch multiple innings at a time and great stuff. And you know, a potential, you know, top 5 first overall pick potentially.
Yep.
And, you know, you look at their lineup, and it says a lot about their lineup that you have David Kerrion, a guy with 14 home runs, the guy leading the team in average, you know, batting 7th in that lineup. You know,
right.
It's a deep group, and it's a lineup that doesn't often get enough credit. You know, I know when I saw them at Ohio State, they were exceptional, and I know Jimmer saw them at their worst.
They were not exceptional. I mean, they were good, but they didn't. I mean, they did not hit very much, and they weren't especially sharp. I mean, who knows? Maybe they weren't. You know how invested they were in the Big Ten tournament. I mean, they had the streak, but they didn't. I mean, just kind of listening to them, the way they talked about the streak. I mean, they weren't all that jazzed about it, really. I guess maybe it had just gotten old. I don't know, but because they'd already set every record they could set with it. So, I mean, they lose the game to Maryland, and they're just kind of, you know, we'll just come back tomorrow, and then they. You know, didn't seem like it was that big a deal to them. So, but the two games they lost, they made a fair amount of mistakes. It was not the particularly clean, and they didn't really hit the ball much all weekend. Kerrion, I think he only had 2 hits all weekend, but he probably hit the ball harder than his numbers show. But I mean, yeah, I mean they are very deep. They're very very deep on the mound. The lineup is 7 strong. You can get a little bit of a break at the end, but. They're a tough team. They're 22-2 at home.
Wow.
So that bodes pretty well.
That does bode well.
Yeah, I mean, they've only lost 7 games all year, but yeah, 22-2 at home. And like so, Notre Dame, a young team that's never been there. I mean, well, Illinois. I mean, they were there in regionals 2 years ago, but Notre Dame's never been there before. At least the players haven't. But Wright State's a team that's. I don't think they've been in regionals. Recently, I know they're usually one of the top teams in their league, but in Ohio, you know, kind of a MAC team that wasn't one of the better teams in the MAC. I don't think they only got on a run at the end, but yeah, I mean the Illini, I think they'll, yeah, they should. I don't see them losing a game here, even if I mean Notre Dame if they're feeling it, if they get hot, you know, you could see maybe them giving them a run, but I think this is the Illini is to lose here.
This was a streaky kind of year. We had a lot of wins. We had 2 20-plus win streaks this year with Texas A&M and Illinois. But the longest win streaks in college baseball history are 34 games, Texas and Florida Atlantic. Texas did it in 1977. I don't believe they won the national championship that year, and neither did Florida Atlantic the year they won 34 in a row in 1999. I mean, Illinois didn't set a record, but I almost wonder if Illinois... the fact that they weren't sharp in the Big Ten tournament, they had something to play for. It was not locked up. They were a national seed. They shouldn't have played poorly in the Big Ten tournament, frankly. That's a troubling sign for to me for a team like that, that's a that veteran of a team. I still like them to win this regional. I think Wright State's a little bit dangerous. I always like Coach Greg Lovelady. Was a great player at the U, another 1999 University of Miami guy. They've got a talented player in Ryan Fucci, who's got 13 home runs, 6'6 runner. Guy has some tools, certainly strikes out a lot, 67 strikeouts, but second on the team in stolen bases, first the team in home runs, first in the team in second in the team in RBIs. This is an interesting team that's well coached. They're not going to roll over for anybody. And Trapino gives them a money kind of reliever. Elliot Andrew, they've got a couple of relievers that they like out of their bullpen. I think Wright State's interesting. They're always interesting. It's always a good team. So it wouldn't shock me if Wright State pulled an upset here or two. But it feels like this is a one seed, a three seed, and a couple of fours, or maybe two three seeds. Wright State does play a pretty decent schedule.
Yeah, I mean, Wright State, yeah, that's kind of what you're saying. I mean, their RPI, I think, was in the three seed range, so that's kind of, I mean, it feels like a four. I mean, it's a team in the, I forget what conference they're from now.
Yeah, but I'll throw this in. Yeah. They're 16th in the country in scoring margin. Miami first.
And they are, well, they are.
Florida, which is second, not even in the tournament.
Yeah.
So stay hot, committee. I feel like we didn't even talk about North Florida as a team that didn't get in.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just that right there, scoring margin, I hope that was brought up. I didn't know until just now. Thank you, Warren Nolan, but I hope somebody brought that up for North Florida, because if you know anything about modern baseball metrics, that's a good metric. When your run differential is that hot, that's impressive. That's hashtag impressive.
Yeah.
So I would have liked for, I hope somebody brought that up. It's doubtful that anybody did, considering I didn't know that until just now, and I do feel like I follow this fairly closely, but you look at the run differential winners, leaders in the country, Miami, North Florida, but then LSU, Illinois, Oklahoma State, Oral Roberts. These are teams with gaudy records. These are almost all one seeds. Missouri State is next. Hey, there's Nevada, too. Nevada. I got to say it more nasally. UCLA and Texas A&M, that's your top 10.
Definitely helps for Nevada when they're putting up 20 runs a game.
That's it. But, I mean, run differential matters.
Yeah.
It tells you something about it. So I hope someone brought that up for North Florida. They're two.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. I'm picking Illinois. I think we're all picking Illinois.
Yeah.
At this table. Not sure about your table. We're all picking Illinois. Segue from last time to Vanderbilt. What was your Vanderbilt? Oh, the whistle guys. We're anti-whistling, but we are pro-Vanderbilt. And that this is, a talented, fun team to watch. Radford, they're two. Indiana, they're three. Radford has a 15-game winning streak, second longest in the tournament after Missouri State. Guys, I mean, you know, but can anybody dethrone the defending champs at home? It feels like, how do you beat Vanderbilt, Mike? It feels like a lot of times when Vanderbilt loses, they beat themselves. Errors or the bullpen implodes.
Yeah, I would say that, or just getting to, you know, Walker Buehler or Carson Fulmer, which is tough to do, but that's really, you look at their SEC tournament losses, and
right.
You know, it's because Carson Fulmer wasn't at his best. You know, he gave up three home runs. You know, watching them, they were maybe the most impressive team that I saw, just in terms of just the eye test and just watching them. I mean, every pitcher that they bring out there on the mound, he's throwing low to mid-90s with the breaking ball, you know, up and down that lineup. It's young in spots, but the young hitters that they have acclimated well, guys like Will Toffey, Penn Murphy, those
right.
kinds of guys, they've acclimated well. Dansby Swanson, anyone who follows me on Twitter saw all my Dansby Swanson man-crushing all week. I mean, he was just fantastic, you know, hitting four home runs in the tournament, doing everything right, making relay throws, making leaping catches, everything. And he's really the heart and soul of that team. He's their leader, like Alex Bregman is for LSU. You know, that's an easy comparison to make, but they're a dangerous club, and I don't see any team knocking them off in this regional. I think they have plenty of pitching depth, plenty of guys that they could turn to. You know, they have Phil Pfeiffer, John Kilichowski, Jordan Sheffield, three guys right there that could start.
Right.
You know,
pretty much anybody
that they could throw into the rotation.
Five, basically, that's almost
yeah.
4-5-6, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
Pfeiffer, I guess, is in the top three for them.
Yeah, Pfeiffer's moved into the rotation of late, but Sheffield could be that guy too, and they all have great stuff, and so they're just a very, 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 very deep team. Even with the guys that they lost from last year, they're still remarkably deep.
And that's also without Hayden Stone, who
right.
was crucial for them in Omaha last year as kind of a go-to fireman, really, out of their bullpen.
Right.
I do wonder. I mean, Pfeiffer leads their team in saves, you know, and obviously he's in the rotation now.
Right.
I wonder if, you know, any, did they use things differently at all? They do things differently at all in the SEC tournament as far as how they handled their pitchers?
Yeah, I mean, they really didn't have a situation where they needed to get a save. They didn't really have a close game there, you know. So it was really just kind of mixing and matching and I think just trying different things pitching-wise for them. I mean, they had really two games. They had Jordan Sheffield and Kilichowski in two games. They each threw five innings to close out the games. Kilichowski threw five perfect innings.
Right.
And Sheffield was, I think, just gave up one hit in his five innings. So they really relied on kind of those longer relief kind of guys. And that's right. what they've done for most of the year, too. They'll usually just give it to one or two guys and let them carry them to the end. They did that a lot with Pfeiffer. That's why he has as many saves as he has. Because they'll bring him in the seventh inning and let it ride the rest
right.
of the way. So I think all those pitchers are really interchangeable for them, which is kind of the scary thing with them is that they have so many guys in that mold that they could fill in.
That's it. I mean, I think they wish that one of those guys or two of those guys would step forward more consistently, mm-hmm. but it feels like it hasn't quite happened. I'll tell you, the biggest surprise for me with Vanderbilt is that Brian Reynolds, this is a guy who was a pure hitter last year. I know that as a team, it's a very aggressive approach, but so I don't begrudge them all the strikeouts. I mean, that's a lot of strikeouts. But Brian Reynolds, I thought this was one of the most pure hitters in the country last year in Omaha. 60 strikeouts for Brian Reynolds and a sub-300 batting average? That surprise you at all, Jim? Does anything about Stanford? The new Stanford. Does anything about Vanderbilt surprise you with this, the way this team's performed this year?
Not especially. I mean, I think they've pretty much been who we thought they would be. I mean, they're often, I kind of feel like they've been top to bottom. I actually feel like they've been a little better offensively than I thought they would be anyway. I mean, obviously Dansby is, you know, kind of the star there. Everyone knows, but I mean, Will Toffey's been a guy who's really stepped up as a freshman.
They are top 15 in the country in runs, mm-hmm. so they do score.
Exactly. I mean, just watching them this weekend. I mean, they don't really have like the first five hitters in the lineup, five, six hitters. They don't really have an easy out there. There's no let up there. Even starting with Roll Coleman. I mean, I don't know how you throw strikes to Roll Coleman. That strike zone is pretty small.
Actual Eddie Goodell, who can actually play. So they led the SEC in runs scored outside of LSU, of course. I mean, LSU 11 more runs than them. That's, you know, those two teams offensively were the best teams in the Southeastern Conference, and Florida kind of nipping at their heels. But
yeah.
I'm surprised at how often Vanderbilt strikes out. It hasn't been an Achilles heel for them yet. Is there a pitching staff here that can take advantage of that? Could Lipscomb, Indiana, or
Indiana's got a lot of arms. I mean, Indiana is, first of all, I think it is kind of, I mean, if a Vandy-Indiana matchup kind of materializes, I think that would be kind of fun. Just, I mean, that was supposed to be a super regional last year until Stanford went and spoiled it, hitting I think it was the Tommy Edmonds, the walk-off home run to knock out the Kyle Schwarber and company there in Bloomington. But, I mean, Indiana's very, that's
and
a very...
And screaming Cal Quantrill.
Exactly.
Whose karma came back on him. I shouldn't say it like that, but I mean, obviously, that was... Yeah, an injury-plagued sophomore season with Cal Quantrill. The last we saw him in the regional, he was being used on one day's rest, I believe it was.
I think so, yeah.
And shut down.
I think it was
Indiana.
2 days, yeah.
Whatever it was less but, than it was suboptimal, and then he got hurt this year. Big, no big shot.
But yeah, I mean, they've still got some holdovers from that team. Scott Donnelly, Brad Hartong, who's, you know, transitioned to catcher this year. He's had a very good year. Casey Rodriguez at the top of the lineup.
Yeah, and I like the freshman Logan Sowers.
He's been very good. He was very. He kind of, I feel like, if I remember, he kind of struggled in Minneapolis. But I mean, they've got guys that have been there. They're, you know, obviously we think very highly of Chris Lemonis and that staff. I mean, they've got a pretty deep stable of arms. So I mean, if they can, I mean,
they really don't have three guys who've been there guys all year. Like Jake Kelzer was the guy we thought would take the next step. He's kind of lost his job in the rotation, hasn't he?
Yeah, he has. I mean, they've kind of mixed and matched a little bit, but they've got options. That's kind of how they can do it, and they've gotten hot. They've kind of figured things out down the stretch, and I think they won the last three, four series, something like that. They went and they swept Maryland. That was a big turning point for them. They swept Long Beach State in a non-conference series.
You're gonna pick Indiana, aren't you?
No, I don't think so.
Okay,
I'd kind of like to, but I think they can be.
I'm with you. They're lurking.
They're interesting, yeah.
They're lurking, and just like you said, that could have been super regional last year. I feel like Vanderbilt is extremely dangerous to all involved, to the other teams and to themselves. It feels like when they lose, They self-destruct a little bit on the mound with their bullpen. And
I mean, Indiana can punish you if it's not your day. You're gonna get beat. And Radford's a good. I mean, they're a good mid-major. They've got some balance, but I mean, they're a team that's never been here before, so. Playing on the road against the defending national champs, so, you know, see how they respond.
They're missing their best offensive player, too, and Josh Gardner, who fractured his kneecap.
Don't.
So, I mean, they've still won without him, but, you know, you wonder how long they can keep going without their best guy. I mean, I know that's part of their motivation, is trying to win, because he'd probably be available to come back should they make a super regional, you know, around that time frame. So
Interesting.
But, yeah.
That's very interesting. Let's go to the fourth. We're all picking Vanderbilt, right?
Yes. Yeah, I'm going Vandy.
We're all picking Vanderbilt. Let's go out to Fullerton, because this is a fascinating regional as well. Cal State Fullerton the 1, Arizona State the 2, Clemson the 3, Pepperdine the 4. I guess Pepperdine wasn't, or St. David State, not good enough to be a 3, because they wound up, which I, St. David State as a 4 surprised me a little bit, Jim.
That was, yeah.
I thought they should have been a 3, then you could have had the all-West teams at Lake Elsinore.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, Pepperdine gets sent to the OC. Arizona State probably felt like 3 weeks ago they were going to host a regional,
yeah.
And we thought they were too at Phoenix Muni.
Yeah, for a long time I had them in there.
The Titans were not in any of your Field of 64 hosting projections until the last
they
one,
were,
right?
I mean, they were out entirely at one time after they lost that series to Maryland. I mean, they didn't look good there. They were kind of floundering a bit. I mean, I think there was 1 week where I had them dropped out, and then obviously they sure have pieced it together. They figured something out.
I'll tell you what. Number one, Thomas Eshelman is a beast.
Yeah, and they've done it with losing Justin Garza too. That's the other thing.
That is the other thing. That's the impressive thing, is that Fullerton has just gotten better down the stretch. But it really feels like, Jim, what you saw at Maryland, which is a team that had no offensive execution,
none whatsoever,
no consistency, no consistent way to get runs.
No.
It's clicked. Things have clicked for this team. Rick Vanderhook is a very good offensive coach. He's got that reputation for a reason. And they figured it out, guys. But how do they match up with Arizona State? Arizona State's got 3 confident starters in Martinez, Lilick, and Kellogg. They've got a money closer in Ryan Burr. And Arizona State is used to playing that West Coast style and defending it in Tracy Smith's first season down in Tempe. I don't like Clemson's chances to win this regional. I will say Clemson's pretty physical.
I mean, if Matthew Crownover could beat Arizona State, I mean, he beats just about everybody.
That's right.
Like, I can't remember what he did in
the
ACC tournament.
He lost to Florida State in the ACC tournament in a 3-1 game where Boomer Bogowski shoved.
Okay, so yeah.
And he gave up one big hit, a 2-run triple, I believe it was, DJ Stewart.
So, I mean, it wouldn't shock me if Clemson wins that game with him on the mound, but... Yeah, I mean, they're not. I don't see them going out there and winning the whole thing.
And I mean, depending on how Zach Irwin pitches behind him, too, you know, he's had his moments this year.
Zach Irwin's
as well.
Good.
Yeah, he has good stuff. So, you know, they could possibly make some noise. I don't think they'll win, but I think they could make some noise.
We had a question as to whether or not Clemson saved Jack Leggett's job by getting this regional berth. I had a couple questions from fans. I have no inside information there. It's not something I am great at doing, is digging on college coaching changes. I used to be more plugged into that than I am. It doesn't have anything to do with the draft, so I'm not as onto that as I used to be. Really doesn't feel like Jack Leggett should lose his job in a year where they go to regionals, but 32-27, and it felt like it was kind of a gift for them to get in.
Yeah.
And again, I felt like it's not bad they're in. It's not a calamity. Or a tragic Bronson.
And certainly, you can make a case for them. I mean, it's they beat Florida State, as we've mentioned. They go 16-14 in the ACC, a very good league, or a good league. So, I mean, you can argue there is a case to be made for them, but it's just with a RPI in the 50s. I mean, that's pretty rare for a team like them to get in.
I just think there are 3 teams that you can make better cases for in Nevada, in
good pronunciation.
Thank you,
Michigan State.
And then in North Florida as well. I think you can make good cases for each of those 3 teams over Clemson, and I think, honestly, over Oregon as well.
But those are good points. Let's move on to what has been the key, Jim, Mike. What's unlocked the offense for Cal State Fullerton? Was it Jared Bravo and Josh Vargas moving up in that lineup and getting more involved in the lineup? was did they just take more doses? They've got 84 doses this year. 84 hit by pitches. Are you kidding me? There are four guys on this team with double-digit HBPs.
It's all about sticking those elbows out. That's really been the key. Yeah, that's really been the key.
Feels like Scottie Hurst got a little hotter lately. I mean, had a terrible start to the year anyway.
Yeah.
In your minds, what's key to this offense, or is it just a matter of a little bit more buy-in to the Rick Vanderhook way of doing things?
Yeah, I mean, I would think it's a matter of execution. I mean, they couldn't get anything done when I was seeing them. And you look at some of these guys. I mean, we got Davey Olmedo Barrero up there with 8 home runs. They've got a little bit of thump. You got one guy anyway with some thump. Just
that
Estel.
Changes things.
Yeah, it does. That's kind of not what how you picture Fullerton scoring. But so they've got one guy in there that can do that. And then, yeah, I mean, they figured out a way to play their style, and they've been able to make it work down the stretch here. And it's just all about what they can do on the mound. I mean, that's kind of Eshelman's the separator.
They start tremendously with Eshelman, and I have to imagine they're going to save him for. They're not going to throw him up against Pepperdine. They close great with Pietsmeyer. He's one of the nation's better closers. I mean, he doesn't blow you away, but he's been very effective all year. And it just feels like this is a team that, if they figure it out in between, they can win this regional. But I'm actually picking Arizona State, guys. I'm picking the Sun Devils. I know they've struggled for the last month and a half. I don't feel like there's not an exceptional team in this regional.
No, that's fair.
It's a pretty flat regional.
I agree with you, and honestly, I'm a little surprised you're not going with Fullerton, given our college preview cover and the Fullerton love of late. But
that's right. You know, I have a deep reservoir of good feelings for the program and for Thomas Eshelman.
Yeah.
I don't see the depth of pitching there.
I agree with you.
And if they don't, I just, you know, Pepperdine went to regionals. They went to Super Regional last year. Now, Aaron Brown is not walking through that door. He was the best player in any Super Regional last year, basically. That guy was a beast for Pepperdine last year.
Yeah.
And Pepperdine had to kind of scrap claw its way. I do like Fullerton's offense. When you look at the Big West numbers, I do like how they rallied offensively, but just something about Arizona State's pitching and the way things are set up. Tracy Smith's gone to Omaha before. He's taken a team to Omaha. Rick Vanderhook hasn't.
Yeah.
Fullerton hasn't been since 2009. I'm going to give a slight edge to the Sun Devils there. I guess I'm just in a Pac-12 state of mind.
No, I'm going to Arizona State, too.
Wow, all right, Jimmer.
I'll take the upset then and go with Fullerton.
Exactly. Last regional.
I'll take the hotter team, basically.
They are a hot team. They are a hot team, and they deserve I'm happy that they hosted. I'm happy that they turned things around. I think Arizona State, a little bit more talented team that figured things out a little bit at the end. Last but not least, the Louisville regional. Man, I'm telling you, the Cardinals slumped at the end of the year. They were not. It's not a good look when your number one starter is getting housed every week.
They're in a funk.
Kyle Funkhauser. They are in a funk. And Kyle Funkhauser, first of all, his stuff waned and his draft stock fell. Then he got hammered by Clemson. Didn't even make it past the fifth inning. But Louisville hangs on. They're still a number one seed, and they're the number three national seed. This is an overseed, if you ask me. I know they went 25-5 in the ACC. They did not deserve to be the number three national seed. I don't feel like. If they weren't the top eight national seed, it wouldn't have shocked me. I feel they deserved it. 25-5 is 25-5, but the ACC was a mediocre league that should have gotten 6 bids max. It got 7. I feel like they're overseeded at 3. It doesn't really matter, but they're the one. Then they got a gift 2 seed in Bradley. We'll let Jim rage in a minute. Michigan is a dangerous 3, a 3 RPI, but kind of like Texas, basically. Mm-hmm. Talented team that was a preseason projected field of 64 team that had to rally after early injuries, won their conference tournament, got in. And then Morehead State, which leads the country in batting by a wide margin, with a pretty good coach there. Coach McGuire was for a long time assistant at Winthrop, then the head coach of Lewisburg Junior College, now Morehead State. Still, this regional feels like it's Louisville's regional. I don't feel like Louisville's... I feel like Brendan McKay and their bullpen should be enough for Louisville to win this regional, guys.
The funny thing is, can you trust Kyle Funkhauser to beat Morehead State?
I know, that's a great question. Right now, I don't know.
One thing I'll say is, talking to Rich Hill earlier in the year, head coach at San Diego, he was really hot.
He wrote that.
Yeah.
They lost at home to Morehead State, didn't they?
They did. Morehead State won 3 out of 4, And right. he said,
"That's a good call. That's a great call."
And he said, "Hey, you know, Morehead State can hit," and he was right. They can hit. You know, people should have taken him more seriously back then, but they can hit. And
by people, you mean us?
Yes, by us. And so you know that you know they're going to be a threat in this regional. I mean, look, I still think Louisville is the clear favorite here. And even if Funkhauser isn't throwing well, the way Brandon McKay has thrown this year, Josh Rogers has thrown well this year. Yeah. They still have depth on the mound. They still have some depth in the bullpen. Generally, I know the bullpen was a little shaky near the end of the ACC tournament.
I think you're going to see Josh Rogers actually in the opener against Morehead State because he didn't pitch in the ACC tournament. They were saving him for the championship game. So you're going to see Josh Rogers in the opener.
Yeah.
And then Funkhauser and McKay could go Saturday, and then the other could go Sunday.
Yeah.
So that's actually, even if they save Funkhauser for Sunday, that would give them a little extra rest, maybe an extra bullpen even, to work out any issues that have him in the proverbial funk.
Right. And I think, you know, from talking to Kyle when they were here playing NC State, I mean, I know he was dealing with a little fatigue. He was pulling back in the weight room a little bit because they threw him on short rest back-to-back weeks. So you wonder if it's just he's running out of gas at this point, and if they are able to save him for a little bit, maybe that little extra rest does help him.
I think he's definitely running out of gas because, as J.J. Cooper has detailed, and we'll have this article out this week, he's averaging more than 110 pitches per start.
Yeah.
Per start. So,
yeah.
But when you look at Morehead State's numbers, these are Beezer bat numbers they're putting up. Beezer bat, .335 batting as a team, and they do it, they don't strike out. 361 strikeouts, 254 walks, that's a great ratio as a team. It'll be interesting to see how they fare in this regional. Jim, take the floor.
All right.
We know you love Michigan. You saw them live. You saw them at their best in the Big Ten tournament. It feels like they had the Travis Mazes banged up early. They've really gotten hot late as a team. Jacob Cronenworth is a go-to money closer, reliever. And Bradley, Spencer Gay, Elliot Ashbeck. I know they have some star power there, but you're not a believer in the Bradley Braves. Give us the 30-second to a minute synopsis of why you don't believe in Bradley and why you do believe in Michigan.
All right. Bradley, they're a good... I can live with them being in the field because they have the RPI that they have.
They gamed the system very well.
They did. They gamed it. And Dave Peake, the call yesterday, kind of, I won't say bristled, but he kind of wasn't happy when one of the other reporters mentioned, like, you know, what do you think about teams gaming the RPI? He didn't really, he didn't take too kindly to that assertion. But anyway, that's what Bradley did. And, they went 10-11 in the Missouri Valley. And the thing that gets me, it's not that they're in. You find the RPI is what it is, so fine, put them in. But they're a two seed. I mean, come on.
That's an outrage.
When they're a two seed, you're saying that they have been one of the 32 best teams in the country.
No.
And one of the 32 best teams in the country would not go 10-11 in the Valley. I'm sorry, it's not.
No matter how good the Valley is.
Yeah, no matter how good the Valley is. I mean, it's a three-bid league. It's not the SEC. It's good, but it's not, you know, it's not a power. It's a mid-major league. And they're a good mid-major team. They've got, you know, older guys. They've got some guys that can hit. You know, like Spencer Gaud, Isaac Smith's had a good year, but they're not a two seed. That's kind of a joke. It is.
It is. I think it is a joke. Vince Lahr is not here to stand up for the Valley. He's our mid-major guy.
They can be, you know, they're in fine. They can be. It's not a trap. There have been worse selections over the years. It's not a travesty that they're in because they did win games. They won a lot of games away from home. So that's their credit.
Is it fantastic to you that they get to play your favorite team now, Michigan? Yeah. It only would have been better if they played Maryland.
Oh yeah, exactly. Oh man. And I don't know what you would, I would have to done if they got one of those teams, but yeah, I mean, so Michigan, I mean, we had Michigan as a field of 64 team in the preseason. We thought they'd be good. I'll say they struggled early. They've been banged up a little bit. They kind of found some answers on the mound. I mean, Brett Adcock was money in the Big Ten tournament. They brought him back on 3 days rest in the championship game. So, you know, maybe I don't know if they're going to throw him in that opener. They may not be able to because he just came back on short rest. But anyway. I mean, he was outstanding in both starts, even on 3 days rest. They've got Cronenworth in the bullpen was outstanding. and he does it all for those guys. I was really impressed with him. Jackson Glines, you know, extremely athletic center fielder. Jake Bivens didn't have a great tournament in Minneapolis, but he's had a great year. Corey Bruder's a really athletic guy. Carmen Benedetti, the big first baseman, he's a good hitter.
Starting to be a factor on the mound too.
Exactly. Yeah,
from earlier in the year.
Yeah, I think it was early. He wasn't that good this past week, but I mean, for the year, his numbers are outstanding. So I mean, he's a guy that, I mean, they were still bringing him in high leverage spots, so he's still a guy they trust. But but most of all, I mean, that team, they're feeling it. They're like Indiana. They are very confident. They were very loose, even though they were under this all or nothing pressure of what they had. As I kind of wrote a couple times when I was during the last week, they were extremely loose. They very much believed in themselves. They knew they were good, but they weren't cocky about it. I mean, that was a very impressive week, and they beat all good teams. I mean, they beat Indiana, who was red hot. They beat they beat Iowa, who was obviously the two seed itself. Then they beat Illinois, who was fresh off its streak, and then they beat the Terps in the finals. So I mean, it was a very impressive week, and they've been very hot. They did lose their last regular season series to Oklahoma State, but Oklahoma State's really good. So
you're bullish on the Wolverines.
I am bullish. If Adcock versus McKay, if that is the matchup on Saturday, that would be a very fascinating game.
I'm just going to throw this out there: that BA intern Brent Gervalis, who is a Bradley Braves student, tweeted on May 25th, "This is awesome! What a great group! So proud of these guys. Michigan better be ready because the Braves are coming." So, gauntlet thrown down, mic dropped by Brent Gervalis. Yeah, you'd think as a fellow Greek American, I know how to pronounce his last name, but I don't. Mike, who are you picking to win this regional? I'm picking Louisville.
I'm going Bradley. No, I'm just kidding. No, I'm just kidding. I'm gonna go Louisville.
That was well done. Well done. Jim, are you picking Michigan? Do it.
Oh. Sure. Why not? Maybe 2007 revisited here with them.
It would be. Michigan went on the road in '07 and beat mm-hmm. Vanderbilt. Beating David Price out of the bullpen in the regional final.
Mm-hmm.
Alan Oaks, name that is never spoken in Nashville, with the game-winning home run. So we've got UCLA. We had a smorgasbord of everybody who picked Lake Elsinore. So really, the ones we really disagree on, and I brought the wrong sheet because I don't remember exactly what we picked in the first bracket. That's pretty funny. I feel like we only picked that one upset, really, and I picked Oregon State, I think, to win DBU. But didn't you guys both pick the DBU?
He picked Oregon State. I picked DBU.
Oh, the O State Ballers. You picked DBU, Mike. All right, I brought the wrong sheet of paper. But the rest of those on the left bracket, we picked chalk, except for the Lake Elsinore Regional and the Dallas Regional. On the right side, a little bit more disagreement. Who's your bracket winners on each side, guys? Who's going to advance to the finals? We'll do super regional picks. I guess we have to do super regional picks now. Let's face it.
Yeah.
I'm picking UCLA to get all the way through, I guess, whomever from Lake Elsinore. Mike, on that side of the bracket?
Yeah. Yep. Definitely. Yep.
Jimmer?
Yeah. I mean, got the Bruins winning it all, so yeah.
Okay. Oklahoma State Regional, the Stillwater Regional versus Missouri State. I think we all picked OK State, and I think we all picked Missouri State.
Mm-hmm.
Unless I'm mistaken there. So if we're picking Oklahoma State versus Missouri State, who are you picking to win that super?
Missouri State.
I agree.
I think I'm going to go Missouri State, too. We're going to go chalk there, it looks like. Miami versus the Dallas Baptist / Oregon State winner. I think out of those, I frankly think I like Miami, and I'm surprised. But Miami versus either of those, that's a contrast in styles. And I'll tell you, Dallas Baptist would be a fascinating contrast for Miami.
Yeah.
I would also love to see Andrew Moore against Miami.
Yeah, that would be fascinating, too.
That would be really interesting to watch. I'm still picking the Canes. I think they're the best bet. They're the best hope for the ACC to end its 60-year Omaha drought, 1955 Wake Forest. Jimmer, who do you like there in that super regional?
Yeah, I'll do the Canes.
Michael and Anna.
The Canes are the safest pick. I'm tempted to go DBU, but I think Canes are safer.
I'm penciling you in for DBU just because.
Go for it.
Florida State, I think we all picked the Seminoles in that one. I think we all picked the Gators in the other one.
Yeah.
I think that's going to be a great super regional.
That would be a lot of fun.
Florida versus Florida State. will be a great super regional, but I think it's great. The worst hashtag would win out. That hashtag. No thanks.
I would go Gators. I think Gators are the best team there.
So I think we're going chalk on this left side, Jim. Are we going chalk over here?
Yeah, I'll do the Gators. Well,
you could do the Seminoles. They're a
Seminoles are very good, too.
Yeah.
They are.
Sure, I'll do them. The Seminoles.
Do it.
I mean, they did. Right. I'm not sure if the fact that they beat Florida in the regular season helps them or hurts them, to be honest. But yeah, so.
That's the thing. It was all midweek. And yeah, the weekend series, it would be pretty impressive. This other side of the bracket, we all picked LSU and Houston. Rematch of last year's regional. I'm not picking against the LSU this year.
Me neither.
All right. Mike and I picked A&M. Jim, you picked Coastal. Winner of that versus TCU. I'm on record with TCU. Who you guys have in getting through to Omaha from this side?
Yeah, this does not. A&M feels like a vulnerable matchup for Coastal. TCU does not. I think that's a TCU all the way.
Going with the Schloss.
I think we are all going with the Schloss. Illinois Vandy. Now that will be a fascinating super regional.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It would.
Gotta be honest with you, I feel like that's set up for Illinois. They're a swing and miss bunch on the mound. Kevin Duchesne, I don't think that guy's going to be scared against anybody. And Tyler J, everyday Tyler J, might see action in two or three games in that regional with the physicality and old team, frankly, that Illinois has. I like their chances in that super regional. I don't know that I love Vanderbilt away from home on a non-turf field. Is Illinois turf or not? Is that grass
field?
Question. You were there.
I
no, you
there.
Weren't.
I was Ohio not State. There.
I'm picking
Ohio
Illinois.
State's turf.
I'm picking Illinois to upset Vanderbilt. It would be an upset name wise. Yeah. It would not be an upset seed wise. But I'm picking Illinois to win that one, guys.
Yeah, I mean, I think this definitely would be one of the more enticing matchups on this bracket. I honestly would go with Vanderbilt. Having seen them this week. I just think, I'm not sure, has Illinois faced a lineup as tough as Vanderbilt's this year? Their pitching staff, I mean, I'm not entirely sure.
No, they do. I mean, they played Oklahoma State. Yeah. That's probably, I mean.
Not the same. And it is a field turf park in Illinois, by the way.
Yeah. I don't know. I think Illinois has had a fantastic year, and I would not be surprised if they did beat Vanderbilt. But if I had to pick a team, I'd pick Vandy. I really like on both sides of the ball. Just watching them rake this weekend, and the veterans on the team, the guys that have been there before, the guys like Dansby, the guys like Xander Wheel, guys like that. I go with them.
I'm going back and forth. I can see. I mean, I think it would be fascinating to see Fulmer against that lineup, to see Duchesne against Vandy's lineup. I think I'm going to take the Illini. I think even if they were to lose to Fulmer, I could see them fighting back. If they could, they would extend Tyler J if they have to.
I think it's the Big Ten's world, guys.
Yeah.
We're just living in it. That's how in a year this strong, I just got to feel the Big
Ten. This feels like This feels kind of like a, 52-48 kind of, pick which way I'm leaning, but I'll go with Illinois.
Finally, I picked, and Mike picked the Sun Devils, and Jim, you picked Fullerton, and then Jim, you
so I've
Jim
got a Fullerton, Michigan here.
Michigan Super, which would be at Fullerton, which would be awesome. So, the Fullerton, Michigan theoretical Super Regional winner would be?
Wow. I got to digest that one for a sec.
Mike, you and I have Arizona State versus Louisville.
I got Louisville.
I'm taking Louisville there despite the iffiness of Kyle Funkhauser. I got to tell you, that'd be a little bit of a scary matchup because you know that Tracy Smith and Illinois, I mean, Indiana played Louisville midweek constantly. Those coaching staffs know each other. And obviously, Chris Lemonis from Louisville, now replaced Tracy Smith in Indiana. That'd be kind of an incestuous super regional there.
Yeah.
I'm taking Louisville to get to Omaha, but I don't feel good about them.
I mean, I don't feel super good about Arizona State either, though.
Yes.
And their rotation has been inconsistent and down all year.
That's fair.
I'm more comfortable with Louisville than I am with Arizona State.
The way this thing is setting up, I mean, it feels... I'll tell you what, it feels strange to pick two Big Ten teams.
Yeah.
But Michigan is... They're so athletic. I can see them holding their own against what Fullerton wants to do, offensively. And, I mean, even if they lose to Eshelman, they could come back. Oh, man.
Dude, Do it.
It is. It's really. I want to pick Michigan. I mean, it just feels. The only thing that's stopping me is like really two Big Ten teams in Omaha, but.
That would make it on the Jim Ledger. That would make Florida Sully, Vanderbilt with
Corbin.
Tim Corbin, and then Eric Bakich, who's like the younger like member of that coaching tree in Omaha.
It's like a coaching grandson.
Exactly. That's right. He's the coaching grandson. He's of two families. He's of the Keith LeClair. Well, he's the Jack Leggett family. Because Keith LeClair played for Jack Leggett at Western Carolina, then coached Eric Bakich at East Carolina. Mm-hmm. And I will repeat this again. The East Carolina coaching tree from the 2001 team, Brian Ward, assistant coach out at Loyola Marymount, Nick Schnabel, assistant at Michigan, to Eric Bakich, Joe Hastings, assistant coach at Coastal Carolina. College baseball is lousy with these guys from that era of East Carolina baseball. Clayton McCullough, not pictured in this regional because he's the field coordinator for the Los Angeles Dodgers. But that ECU team was a special group. And Eric Bakich, for these two great coaching trees, the LeClair coaching tree and the Leggett coaching tree. So Jack Leggett may not make it to Omaha, but a lot of his progeny will.
Mm-hmm.
So we're picking UCLA, Missouri State, Miami, a little DBU, 48% for Mike, and then Florida for me and Mike, Jim with Florida State, LSU, TCU, and then it just all goes to hell in the bottom right. We're all in disagreement. Who's your national championship pick, Mike, in the finals? Who'd you pick? One from each bracket. You haven't been writing this down. You don't even remember who you picked on the right bracket, do you? Isn't it UCLA, Missouri State, Miami, Florida, LSU, TCU, Illinois, and Louisville? So you got to pick one from the left, one from the right. What's your finals matchup? I'll give you a minute to think about it. I'm going to go UCLA, TCU over here. Not UCLA, I'm sorry. Florida. I'm riding the hotter hand. Florida, TCU, and I'm picking TCU in the finals over Florida. So that's a bunch of my picks. I'm writing it down in pen. TCU over Florida and Omaha. Mike, you're next, then Jim. Jim, you can't do Big Ten versus Big Ten. I'm sorry.
I'm going to go, and you can't put the Terps in the final.
I know, I want to.
Too late.
Let's give them a bye to the final.
I'm going to go UCLA versus TCU in the final. I'm in agreement with you on TCU.
Revenge of Dodgertown, is that what you're saying here?
Yeah, and I think UCLA wins.
All right, UCLA over TCU for Mike. Jimmer.
All right, well, I was going to go with the exact same
you can.
One there. Well, I'll stick with UCLA winning. So I've got Illinois and Michigan and LSU as the other teams there, as I recall.
Correct.
I could see LSU getting there, too. I would not be surprised. They were my national title pick in the college preview issue.
All right, just for... I think, if UCLA played TCU, there might be... Three runs scored in the entire series. 3-1-0 games. But I'll take UCLA and LSU. I'll take the over LSU, I should say.
So none of us is picking LSU. That's surprising. I thought that would happen. But I'm just picking TCU because they're pitching depth and style of play.
I wouldn't be surprised if LSU won. You know, you look at their pitching staff and you look at the youth on the staff, and it's just, you know, that UCLA and TCU, I feel like, are safer bets.
That's exactly.
And I realize I'm going way out on a limb to pick the number one team to beat the number two team. But.
Right, exactly. Yeah. That's okay. Well, we're all picking national seeds, and it feels like it shouldn't be that way because there's so much parity. But by the end of the year, it does feel like things shake out a little bit more.
Yeah.
And I do feel like out of those top, and maybe we're underestimating Missouri State. We'll get a better report on them in regional play. But I feel like we, you know, again, really good team at the top. A steady player in Tate Matheny. I feel like they're 48-13 or whatever they are, 48-10, 45-10. We haven't even mentioned them. Top eight national seed, but we haven't gone to Omaha. It just feels like, I mean, I have a hunch like I'm light on Missouri State, but I do feel better about, if I'm ranking those teams, I'm thinking Florida, UCLA, TCU, LSU. It feels like those teams have separated themselves a little bit from the pack. Should be an exciting postseason, guys. Fun podcast. Taking 2.5 hours of your time, so I will stop doing that. We hope you guys enjoyed this at home. For Michael and Anna and Jim Schoener, I'm John Manuel. We'll see you on the next Baseball America podcast. So long, everybody.